Accession number 27193, Reel 1.
Company Sergeant Major Khan, Reel 1. Can you tell me if there was a tradition of military service in your family background?
Not traditionally ones, no. Of course, my father served in the First World War, and he was in the Royal Navy. Lost his eye, and that was it. But that's the only connection of military with what I've ever had in our family. I think I'd be the first one.
You were growing up in the 1920s and 30s.
19, yes.
Can you remember if at any point you thought to yourself, there is likely to be another war, or there is going to be another war and we can't avoid it?
No, I didn't think at all there's going to be another war. Not until later on, in about 1935, or somewhere around at that time, when the name Adolf Hitler came to light. Then I thought, then, possibly there was going to be a war in the offing.
Was there anything in particular that...
Pardon?
Was there anything in particular that made you think that, thinking back to it?
Well, yes, when they invaded the various countries, you know, in Europe. And you could see that he was building up. And at that time, our country was disarming. And then after Churchill, Chamberlain came back with a little note, said, peace in our time. And that was it. We knew war was inevitable then.
Do you remember if you had any ideas about how the war might be fought?
No way, no. Not how it's going to be fought, no. Of course, in my early days when we joined, you know, when I was called up, and then I did my training at Worley, and we sort of had, well, weapons and that, which were far, you know, inferior to the Germans and that.
What was your first contact with the army?
When I joined the Essex Regiment.
And how did that happen? Did you volunteer?
No, I was called up. 20 years of age, I was called up to Worley.
But you're not from Essex. What were you doing down here?
Well, I started my career in the mines at Lambton Colliery. And I worked underground from the age of 14 until I was 18. I was involved in their, an accident in the pit where they had a roof collapsed, and I was trapped there for 2 days. And I broke my left hand. And while I was on convalescence, my parents, who I had two brothers working down at Tilbury at the Bartle Shoe Factory. They were recruited down there. And my mother and father then had a coach, went down there with the wives of different people. And I asked my brothers what they were getting there, you know. And they said £2.10 a week. I was getting £1.01 for 6 shifts underground. So I thought, I'll have some of that. And I went across to the manager, and I asked if there's a possibility to get the job. He says, where are you from? I said, Durham. I said, I've got two brothers working down here. Oh, he said, when can you start? I said, any time. This was on a Thursday, start Monday. So I started Monday. And I wrote for my cards at the colliery, and they wouldn't send them. He said, you've got to come back to the colliery. I said, no way. And they said, well, if you don't come back, we'll stop your father's dough. Well, my brothers and I, we got together, and we decided to bring my old father back down and get him a job. And we got a job as a cleaner in the Bartle Shoe Factory. And he lived in the hotel, which is part of the hostel where we lived. And from there, we managed to get them in. And then my mother and then came down from the north, and we found a house in Grays, you know.
So you got the whole family concentrated.
They all came down together, and we found a house, and that was it. Then we got on all right, and then when the war broke out down then, and I was called up, and my father then, being as an ex-naval man and a stoker, got a job in the docks. And he was working in the docks on ships, doing the anti-magnetic thing round the ships, you know. And he worked there right up to the end of the war as well.
When was it exactly that you were called up? Was it before the war began or after?
No, it was on the 6th of June 1940.
6th of June 1940, so the war had begun.
Oh, yes. 1939, isn't it?
Yeah, 3rd of September 1939. Definitely. Did that have any impact on your working life?
In what way? How would you mean? You know.
Did the factory go over to doing war work or anything of that sort?
Well, it was a shoe factory. And they had contracts with the army for, you know, for making shoes and that. And that's what we continued doing until I went into the army.
What happened then? You got a call up. Did you report to Worley direct?
That's right.
What happened on your first day in the army when you got to Worley?
The funny thing is, when I reported to Worley, and we had to go through the various, what they call it, you know, we had to go through the gymnasium. And we sipped off and had a sort of medical. And then I got on the scales, and the QMSI of the of the APTC in charge, he asked my name. I said, "Con." So, "Where are you from?" I said, "From Grays, Essex." He said, "No, you're not." He said, "You got a Geordie accent." Oh, I said, "Well, I'm from the north." He said, "Your father got one eye?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "I'm your cousin." And that was it.
Remarkable coincidence.
Remarkable. And that was it. And we got on. And then from there, I got my army regimental number, and that was it. Then we started the training in that.
What was the content of the first few weeks of training, the basic training that you did initially?
Well, I enjoyed it. And because I found that there's a lot of people in there as well were homesick and things like that. But it never affected me because I'd worked away from home, you know, and had a different outlook on life. And I took to it all right. I took to it like duck to water.
But what was it you actually learned in that first few weeks? What did you have to do?
Drill. Foot drill and things like that, you know. And we got on with that, all right. Then they got arms drill and various other drills, you know what I mean? Formations and all the rest of it. Then we went on to training, you know, various training in the woods round about.
More tactical training?
Oh, tactical training, yes.
Do you remember when that started? Was that an early?
It was just after more or less the basics, you know, where we first started. And we used to go out into the woods and things like that, and sometimes you've got to find out if you take cover in certain places. And you had the umpires go around checking, you know, and that was very interesting. I enjoyed that. Basically. And then from after that, when we get towards the end, we had to go to Purfleet for the rifle training, for your rifle training. And we marched all the way from Worley through Ockenden right down into Purfleet, quite a long way. And we were in an army camp there, and I think it must have been prisoner war camp during the First World War, I think. But anyway, we enjoyed it there. And of course, my parents lived in Grays at that time, so when we get in the evening, I used to nip home, see the parents. And then, and that was it.
What did you think of the rifle when you first encountered it? I mean, I'm assuming you'd done no military training.
Well, I'd
before.
Never done any military training before. And it was, you know, strange at first. But I found that the rifle, the Lee Enfield we had, was very balanced. And I was a marksman when I done my training. And because we used to do the bayonet training and everything as well, like, you know, with the 9-inch bayonets, rather than this little fixed stick we got on later on. But yes, it was a good rifle, a damn good rifle, that.
Do you remember if you had the Bren gun at that time?
We got the Bren gun, and we, yes, and we had to strip it and everything, you know, to learn all the parts. And the instructors we had were pretty good as well, you know. We had a damn good sergeant there.
Do you remember his name?
Yes, Chittock.
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 Was he an Essex man?
Oh, he was an Essex man. He was a damn good bugler, and apparently he was in the drums before, you know what I mean, and served in India, and we used to kid him on, you know, and he said, "I was a bugler, silver bugler," and we used to kid him on in the barrack, and God, he talked a load of crap, you know. And anyway, one night he went out and he blew the lights out. and it was terrific. Mindy was good as well.
What was the accommodation like at Walling?
Well, we were in the Spiders, which was opposite the barracks itself, where they had the big parade ground and the huts were in Spiders, you know what I mean? And we were in them. They were quite comfortable, actually, yeah, very comfortable.
How many men did you have in a barrack room?
Oh, God, about 40, I should think. Yeah. About 40, something like that, anyway.
You're saying that some of them were homesick because they away from home.
Yeah.
Were there any other difficulties that were prevalent amongst them? Were there any who couldn't take the discipline or didn't like it? Or
no, you used to get them. You used to always have the different people, you know what I mean? Different, you could categorize them, you know. Some were easygoing, some were sort of, crybabies and that. But you got the odd bullies and that amongst them. And this was it. Now, I was only a young soldier at that time, and I know once or twice I had a couple of cockneys come up there, you know, I'd do this, and I said, no way. And I wouldn't give in to them, you know. And anyway, we got over that. And I eventually got on all right with companies after. But the thing was, they couldn't understand me.
Because of the accent?
Because of the accent. Mm. And they asked me if I was either a Scotsman, Irishman, a Welshman or what. And I said, no, I'm English. Not with a scent like that, he said. You know, you're not wrong. But they weren't accepted. Mm. And there's a funny thing happened on that one. When I finished my training, and I used to go on leave. And I used to have my pass made out for Newcastle. Because my mother was evacuated there with my young brother. So I used to go up there and spend part of my leave there and then come back and spend the rest with my father, who was living on his own because working in the docks. Well, I did the first part and then I came back and I spent, I think it was only 4 days with my father. And there was another chap who lived at Grays as well. And we were going to come back to the barracks, and there was an air raid on. Well, we couldn't get a bus to go back to Brentwood. So he nipped home, and he got a bicycle, and he came back with his bicycle. Well, I rode on the crossbar, and he pedalled till we got to Ockenden, and we had a puncture. So we decided what to do, so I got some grass, and we rolled his grass and put it into the tyre, you know what I mean? But it wasn't good enough. But anyway, one walked and the other rode. Well, we eventually got back to the barracks, and we were 10 minutes late, so we got poked. And I was then unhooked. Well, my cousin, the APT Sergeant Major, came into the barracks room, and he said, I hear you're on the 252, I said, yeah. He said, what for? I said, been 10 minutes late. So he said, where was your pass made up for? I said, Newcastle. Right, he said. When you go in, he said, tell them you had your pass made for Newcastle. You left the day before to come down to King's Cross. Had an air raid. Going through the air raid, you had to make your own way back to Worley. And you got back 10 minutes late. How'd you get back? He said, by hitchhiking and lift. All right. So anyway, this other chap, his name is gone from Bill Hopkins. And we were stood outside, and I was the first to go in. When I went in, marched in by the Sergeant Major, and when have you got to save yourself? So I started off. And the commanding officer turned around to the Sergeant Major, and he said, what nationality is this man? He said, I don't know, sir. I said, I'm English. He said, can you get somebody to interpret for him? So they brought my cousin in, and he told them. And they stated what I said, you see. And he said, Newcastle, he said. That's right, we're at the north of England somewhere, isn't it? He said, yes, he said. And only 10 minutes late, case dismissed. So I went out. Old Bill Hopkins stood outside the gate. He said, how'd you get on? I went, all right. Off he went. He got 7 days. And in that time, we got posted. Now, I got posted to the 2nd Battalion, which was at Kington, Hereford, which was on the borders of Wales. And he got posted to the 2nd 5th Battalion in a place in Northumberland. And I thought, oh, God, look what I've missed. You know, getting right up near home. And that. But eventually, they, as you know, the 2nd Falcon 5th went out to the Middle East, and they got wiped out. And he got wounded, and he managed to beat that. He got away. He didn't get captured. But it was many years afterwards, when I was at Worley, we had a reunion. And he saw me, he said, "You," he said, "I want to know how you got off that charge." He said, "That's been worrying me all these years." And I told him. He said, "You crafty son." And that was it. So it just shows, you know, these are the highlights, you know what I mean, the different things that happened.
How to beat the system.
Well, yeah. So anyway, as a game.
You were saying that you've got a very good sergeant. What, when you're doing your basic training, mm-hmm. what sort of method of instruction were they using to teach you how to do things?
Well, the demonstrator first. You had a demonstrator. You know, you had a corporal. If you do the various, you know, how to march and how to swing your arms and all the rest, and how to turn and that sort of thing, how to salute. And because you always had a corporal there who was sort of a demonstrator and all that thing. And then it's the same with rifle drill. You know, when he's teaching how to do the rifle drill, do the by numbers and things like that, you know, and he always had a demonstrator in front of you. And he was a damn good instructor, old Chiddick. He was a really good instructor. And we got on well.
What was the food like, Morley?
Oh, well, that was another question. That's. It was basic, you know, and you used to get your potatoes and cabbage and everything, you know what I mean, and sometimes it was watery, and you got a lot of rice, you know, which is, well, it was edible, but it wasn't very nice at the time, you know, but it was basic. You got 3 good meals a day and it kept you going, and that was it.
How did you get on with the uniform and the boots?
Well, at first, well, it was strange again, because we got issued with denims, you know, first of all.
Yes.
And you weren't allowed to wear a uniform until you'd completed your basic training. And when you had that, you put your stuff, what you call it, onto the uniform, and you had to press it out and get it done, everything. But before you went out, you were always inspected at the gate to see if you were smartly dressed.
Fit for walking out.
Oh, yeah. Sometimes you should get returned, you know, for little silly little things. Go back. You know, that's not done right. Oh, no, you have to go back again. Sometimes it takes you 3 attempts to get out. But anyway, after that was it, you know. But some of them were stupid little things. But anyway, that was some of the things you had to put up with.
In those first few weeks, was there a lot of emphasis on physical training?
Oh, yes. Oh yes, we used to do a lot of physical training that, and I did quite well on that.
Were you generally fit?
Oh yeah. Well, while I was working at Barters, they formed a boxing club, and we were all hostel boys from Barters, and we had to box against the Tilbury boxing clubs and things like that. And I came up against a chap who was on the Tilbury Boxing Club, the Dockers Club. Len Nuns, always remember him. And when I got in the ring with him, some of the chaps said, "Oh, you've got to hide near this fella's put up a Blackfriars and all the rest of it." Well, I knocked him out in the second round. And because his manager then came over to me, he said, "Would you like to join my club?" So I said, "Oh, I don't know." You know, he said, "Well, let me know sometime." Well, another time, we had our boxing team fought against his club again, and I came up against one of his top players, and I beat him. And he said, "Join my club." So I went down there, and I used to cycle down to Tilbury, do the boxing training and everything. Then we went up to Walthamstow, and we boxed in the London Federation Champions. And there were 16 of us went up there, and out of the club, I was the only one that won. And I won the London Federation Championships in 1938.
Had you boxed before when you were up in Durham?
No.
Something new to you then?
But my father had boxed in the Navy. And he was his friend who was in the Navy was called Spike Robson, who came from the Tyneside. He was a professional fighter. And his brother, he was called Spike, was one of the finest lightweights that ever came out of England. And it's in the boxing books of abroad when he went out to America. He fought Jim Driscoll twice for the championship of the world. He lost on his first fight when he went to put him out and he hit the stool and knocked himself out. That was an unfortunate way to go, but there we are.
When you were doing the army PT,
yeah.
What was the emphasis on? Was it strength, or was it endurance, or was it agility?
Well, it's a mixture of all, you know. You had the wall bars, you had different things you had to do. I did very well in that, and when I went to the battalion, apparently my cousin had recommended me for the APTC. And it was while we're up there in Kington. There's another story I'll have to tell you this. We were under canvas in the fields and had the ablutions on the far side, you know, and because we went to go for the washout and walked right across the field to the ablutions. And I was looking around in the tent and I couldn't find my shaving kit. So one of the chaps said, well, borrow mine. When we walked across the field, there was one chap was having a wash and shave there, and there was my shaving kit on the one. I said, that's my shaving kit there. He said, you accused me of stealing? Well, I said, didn't walk over here on his own. I said, how did he get there? And he turned around, he said, I'll sort you out. So I went down, and the PT sergeant had come on the team. He says, right, he said, 6 o'clock, down at the ring. So 6 o'clock came, down we went. And I got in the ring with this chap, because I had my boxer shorts and shoes and that, and got in the ring with him. He had his sand shoes and things, the army PT kit. They got in the ring with him, well, just kept them banging and banging. Never laid a glove on me, you know. So I turned and looked at the PT side and I said, you know, he went like that. And he said, carry on. So anyway, I hit him a couple of times, in the stomach, on the chin, and down he went, and I said, well, that's enough. Went back to the corner, and the PT bloke said to this, Tommy O'Brien, his name was, he said, I think you've had enough, haven't you? Yeah, he said, this bloke's too good for us. So when I went over to shake his hand, he turned on to me and said, have you had enough? Well, I killed myself for laughing. And him and I became the best friends all the way through, you know, till eventually he was posted out to Burma, to the 1st Battalion. But he was a great fellow. And I met him after the war many times. And he used to say to me, there's not enough room in this place for you and I, he said.
And you were going to tell me about the uniform and the boots.
Oh, yes.
How did you get on with the boots?
Well, we got a lot of instruction from the old sergeants, you know what I mean, little ticks they had, and on how to, you know, get dressed properly, put your gaiters on and everything, blanco, clean the brasses, and how to spit and boo your polish, your boots. And that was it. You used to work for hours on that, you know, to go out.
Did you find them comfortable? Did your feet adapt to them?
No. Bit hard going. But not as bad as some of them, because I used to wear pit boots underground, you know what I mean, and they were safety boots. So they weren't too bad for me, actually, but they were to break in, first of all, you know, you got a few blisters.
You were saying you had to march down to Purfleet when you went to do your range work.
Yeah.
Had you done many route marches before?
Well, we had to done them locally, you know. We used to go around the various lanes and did a couple of miles, then they increased it to about 5 miles, then the 10 miles, and that sort of thing. So you were prepared for it, you know.
Were you doing that in full kit?
Oh, yes, yeah, oh, yeah. We used to go off, first of all, in sort of drill kit, then light kit, we just what you call it, and then you used to have your big pack as well. And after. So when we marched down to the rifle range, we had full kit.
Field service marching order.
Oh, field service marching order. And that was that used to be the shoulders, the old straps. That's where you used to get it, in the shoulder strap.
But how did they teach you to shoot? Did you have a demonstrator there?
Oh yes, they used to lie down and show you how to first of all how to get down behind the rifle, legs apart, you know, and nurse it, hug the rifle like you would your lover, and all this sort of thing, you know, and how to hold it, and then don't pull the trigger, squeeze the trigger, and that was it.
Hold your breath.
Hold your breath.
Keep
that's
the sight picture.
Pardon?
Keep the sight picture.
Keep your sights on the water, Corey. Hold your breath. Squeeze the trigger, and that was it.
What sort of distances were you shooting over at Purfleet?
We did on 100 yards, 200 yards, 300 yards, and 600 yards. So we did them.
Sounds like a full course.
A full course, oh yes. Well, we were down there for quite a while. How many weeks? I can't remember, but we were down there for quite a few weeks, yeah.
What about the Bren? Did you shoot?
Oh, yes, the Bren gun. It was a good, damn good gun, that. Mm. Very accurate when you got it, you know. And there's always one, number two as well, where you used to change the barrel, how to change the barrel. Because he used to tell you, even though you didn't need it, but it was just to show you how to do it. Mm. Change the barrel, because that was it, the other one on. Mm. That was it.
Now, you were saying that quite early on you went out into the woods and you were doing some basic field craft.
Yeah.
Was that simply hide-and-seek games, or were you actually learning section tactics or anything?
Well, this was just more or less hide-and-seek at the beginning. Yeah. You know, how to get yourself in a position without being seen, camouflaging yourself, and get in a position where you could, you know, fire a rifle and not be seen. And we, of course, with the trees and that, used to get down beside the water colours and anything like that, you know. And they used to come round, the umpires used to come round, that's very good, that's, oh, that's hopeless, you get, you know, and that was it.
And who were the umpires? Were they the NCOs who'd been instructing you?
And officers.
And officers.
And officers, oh yes, yeah. A company commander up to a major used to come out and do that as well, you know.
Do you remember if in those very early days you did any work at night, patrolling and things like that?
Not at night, no. Yeah. No, we didn't do anything like that. Yeah. Not night time. Mm. Not till you got to the battalion, when you did, you know, you really train and then. And you did all sorts of manoeuvres and that, and, you know, with them, all over the country.
Okay. So you got to the battalion at Kington, and they had come back from Belgium, hadn't they?
They'd come back from Dunkirk. Okay.
What sort of mood were they in when you joined them? What was the spirit in the battalion?
Well, the spirit in the battalion was pretty good, actually, because they'd come in from all over. When the battalion came back, it was split up, as you know. Mm. And there were some up in Stoke and places like that. And eventually they got the battalion down to Kington and got them together then. That's when they started bringing the battalion together. Some of them had had a pretty rough time, and they used to tell you some of mine exaggerated a bit, but we got on well with them, you know, and as regular soldiers, they were pretty good fellas. You know, a lot of them were regulars, actually, you know.
But presumably you went as part of a draft of young chaps who'd
That's
just
right.
done your basic training, and you were all conscripts.
Yeah.
Was there any difficulty in integrating in amongst the regulars and those who'd had this
not
experience?
Not really, no. You know, they used to, old soldiers, you know, they used to put it on a bit, you know.
Did they?
Oh, yeah. But as I say, that's when I joined the battalion, and we marched from there to Leinster, and we were billeted in houses there.
Were there any really old soldiers when you joined the 2nd Battalion?
Oh, yeah. So
men
some of them, the sergeants, were in about 35 and older, some of them. Old Sergeant Major, Billy Bunsell, I always remember him. He came from Brentwood, actually. But there was one instance which happened there. And it was because it was still the same, my difficulty in communicating because of my accent. And they used to say, well, you're Geordie and what do you call it? And it was funny, that's why. While I was in this billet, had some chaps. One was a fellow from Walthamstow, Barton, I always remember him. And there was about three of them in the what do you call it. And of course, I started taking the mickey out of it, you know, and I was that, you know, baby face and all the rest of it. And they started pushing us around. So I did no more than retaliate, and I flattened the three of them. So he said, ah, he must be a Mick. And do you know, that name stuck with me all the way through my army career. Even Michael Holmes today still calls me Mick. You know, it was my name. I didn't know anything else. If anybody asked me my other name, I just didn't take any notice. That was my name all the way through my army career.
Were there many mechs in the regiment? Did we have?
No. I think. But anyway, that's it. And while we're there, there's an incident happening.